Good morning. Today is a Friday, the 8th of September. Joining us this morning, Humble Bay Fire Chief and sound engineer, yes. Sean Robertson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy fall.
Yes.
I mean, I know it's not, but...
It suddenly just came upon us, feels like.
Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. Relief.
Yeah.
For those of us who are not big heat people.
Yes.
You walked right by the new book, didn't you?
Oh, I sure did.
Yes, there it is.
It's camouflaged.
Yeah. You ready?
Sure. You didn't like the other books?
I kind of ran out. I got bored with it, you know, after a couple of years. Mm. So this one was pending. How did the Center of World Commerce, Wall Street, get its name?
Well, I believe I've heard the story, but I don't remember it.
That's okay. Hansel yesterday missed Scotland Yard, so what? You don't have to feel bad.
Yeah, at least my question isn't job-related.
Yeah, right. In September of 1653, the settlers in what is now New York City felt threatened by the local natives and by the possibility of an invasion by Oliver Cromwell's army. For protection, they built a large protective wall that stretched a half mile across Manhattan Island. That wall was situated on the exact spot we know today as the financial center of the world, Wall Street.
Really?
So there was a wall.
Interesting. Yep. It's a good story.
There you go.
Yeah.
Seems much easier.
It seems like a lot of cities and towns have a Wall Street.
Yeah, they also have Smith Lane and
Bond Street or Commercial Road.
First Street.
Empire Road.
You're trying to steer it into that area.
No, I just think that's interesting if you think about when you start planning a place.
Well, you have letters and then you have numbers and then you have, I guess, people's names.
Yeah, it seems geographic like the subdivisions, especially around here, are interesting because they're usually the developer, the builder's grandchildren or something.
Yeah, I know. It's a little narcissistic.
That's, interesting.
Or familial recognition,
legacy
depending on which way you want to
go. Legacy building.
Yeah.
There you go. Or maybe they just
be careful what it's built on that street then.
That's true.
Sean Alley. Okay.
Oh, never seen that.
You haven't, huh?
Not a Sean.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah, that's Sean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's one somewhere.
Oh, I would suspect that there is.
Oh, look.
Change in weather. Doesn't mean change or a chance to ease up in fire.
No.
At all, does it?
No, because it may feel beautiful 50 degrees here, but as we know, inland and elsewhere, it's still very warm and dry. And then we usually see the seasonal winds come up. Santa Ana's down south. And then we've had a lot of activity in the north state the last few years, not really as much in the south, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't had too many this year thus far.
No.
Have you had to send any of the troops out?
Yes, we've had them out for the last 3 weeks. They just came back yesterday. We had our water tender out for a week. They kind of went all over the place, but just chasing those lightning complexes. And then we've had our Type 3 wildland engine out, mostly in the Orleans area for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it would have been the logical guess.
Yeah.
They're gasky, right?
Exactly.
When they're in the neighborhood like that, but they're across jurisdiction, do you guys get the call, or will they call like CDF first if it's in the Forest Service?
Usually, it's both. If it's on Forest Service land, then the Forest Service will respond just because of jurisdiction.
But if they need help?
If they need help, it expands out to local government, but then pretty quickly they'll call for strike teams, and those are deployed through the state.
When do they bring in the airplanes with the
usually
retardants?
Really quickly. The local air attack resources are very active. They're deployed from Roanoke locally, from Neyland Airport with their helicopter, and then there's a lot of the resources in the valley, and they can respond really quickly. So if they see a need for it and they're requested, and they're available, they'll fly out. And oftentimes they may not send out the tankers that drop the
big ones.
Yeah, they may just send out a spotter plane, so they'll go do an assessment and at least do a recon. And if they need the bigger resources, they'll.
Is it because of expense? Because I would think that an aerial drop would be far more efficient and timely than trying to get trucks out there and guys on site and then do the traditional approach.
It can be, but those types of things have to be very well coordinated, because if you've never had thousands of gallons of liquid dropped in your head, you wouldn't think about it.
Yeah, you make sure you don't have anybody underneath.
Yeah, so like I said, often those things have to be well coordinated with. They always have an air attack spotter that essentially guides in the tankers, because they're a much bigger plane.
Somebody on the ground that does that, or another airborne?
They have airborne, so they usually fly higher than the tankers. And then the drops are also coordinated by folks on the ground. And we have we have specific frequencies for that. And cause
so you're not talking to United as they're coming up to ACV?
No.
Yeah, I imagine that. Yeah. Okay, let her drop now.
Yeah,
what?
Don't open the door.
Yeah, so
they're very effective, but it requires a lot of coordination, and they're not that many in the state, so.
That's why I think it would be a limited resource,
yes,
maybe, rather than lack of a desire to utilize.
Yeah. And the bigger as the incidents grow, that requires a whole separate management system. And the bigger the incidents, that's when the bigger the aircraft. So that's when you see the really big ones.
So are the local, I guess terrestrial, fire response teams brought into that equation, or are they informed what's going on, and work it from that perspective?
Both. So in these wildland incidents, they're always expanded. So you have what's called initial attack. So that's essentially, we get a call or somebody sees a column of smoke, they go out and investigate, and it's the local response units, and then it expands from there. So by the time the air resources show up, it's very well coordinated. There's separate resource plans, and incident management is very important to coordinate all of those resources.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, definitely ground has to know.
It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Robertson. So you had some folks out, but they're back?
Yes.
So does that mean you're at full staff, or you can breathe easier now that you have all your gear back here? Or
yeah, I'm glad they're back safe. That's always a concern. There were a few injuries out there on the fire.
Your guys or just
no
of everybody who happened to be there?
Yeah, of everybody. A couple of snags fell, and our folks actually provided medical aid to them, stabilized and got them transported.
Did it land on them?
Yeah, the snag landed.
Oh, really?
On them. Yeah.
That's, spent a little bit of time the last week walking went up to the National Park and then Sequoia Park. You've forgotten about the Widowmakers.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the terminology, great, we understand, but you see the size of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And lift one up, or just one end. You go, holy crap.
Yeah.
Now, if that thing comes rocketing down, whether it's coming down as a spear or if it's coming down horizontal, it doesn't matter. It's still going to do damage.
Oh, yes.
And whatever speed. I had an occasion a number of years ago. Buddy from down south, we pulled over at the national park and heard the crack.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's like, something's going on up there. Mm-hmm. We got out of the way, but maybe 300-400 yards away and felt the impact.
Yeah.
And it was only maybe a 4 or 5 inch branch. It wasn't one of the big ones.
Yeah.
Really. Can't imagine what it's like, you know, either a larger snag or during the windstorms, you know, some of these trees come down.
Right.
And you see the energy that's released just with the breaking of the tree, you know, how it falls apart.
Yeah, and in these fires, it's even more dangerous because a lot of them have been compromised. So for a lot of the fallers, you know, you've been trained or you expect trees to react a certain way. And, man, the scariest thing I can remember was down in the Monterey area. And a tree, it had burned through and cracked midway. And so that part fell down and was suspended on two other big trees, but it was burning.
And so, oh, really?
Yeah. So our job was to extinguish all fire. Well, we have this.
Including?
Yeah, this thing, you know, suspended 30 feet up in the air on a slope. And the fallers were working with us and they said, and the strike team leader insisted and they did it and it was
I would have defined that as ground accessible, no ladders, no helicopters, you know, deal with the fire so it doesn't spread along the ground as well as you could.
Yeah, but they did it.
I mean, that's a three-dimensional. I imagine they must have cut one of the trees instead of standing there with a hose.
Yeah, because you don't want to be under it.
You're right.
Yeah, they cut it.
Maybe all of us could be a firefighter with that kind of insight.
That's right.
Don't be under burning trees.
That's
okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so it's very dangerous.
Yeah, well, and how do you train to that stuff? Because so many of those situations are unique, once-in-a-lifetime kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Is it more of just a skill set of logic development rather than relying on emotion to take care of some of these situations, and that kind of narrows the focus?
It's really a risk management process, and it definitely depends on experience, and that can also be risky because your experience may lead you down the wrong road. Yeah, the classic example is, you know, you've never experienced something or you've done something this way for forever and it hasn't ever been a problem until one day it is. And then, you know, you can get in trouble. So having a risk management thought process always will, you hopefully are questioning that perspective. And that's where often if we have very risky situations, we bounce perspectives off each other so we can get a better overall perspective and then make the right choice. That, and then we have to take extra precautions. So, you know, this goes back to our talk about the airplanes. I mean, the risk there is huge because they're in a very, very dynamic situation and you get some kind of
just an updraft.
Visibility issue or an updraft, change in the wind, and suddenly things are really not good.
Yeah, so they see exactly what you guys do, plus they've got some other concerns.
Yeah. And in our job, I mean, this is every day, right? Like every day you're dealing with things you've never seen before, and you have to depend on your training, and that's why our foundational training is really important, and then you build up this experience. So that risk management process at some point is very intuitive, because you've developed it, because you've practiced it. And then when you get old, you know, old and salty like me.
Salty?
I have some salt in my hair.
Oh, a little salty. There was salt and pepper.
Yeah. You hopefully have those perspectives, and then you can help educate other people.
Yeah, I would think that probably the most challenging potential situation would be that scenario that 98.5% of the time it goes this way.
Mm-hmm.
which is interpreted as it always. And it's that 1.5 that can get you.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess you just got to keep your wits about you, huh?
Yes.
And look out for burning trees above you.
Above you, yeah.
That's so weird.
Fire from the skies. Yeah.
Yeah. Thor strikes. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humble Bay Fire Chief Sean Robertson. I think that there is probably a general sense when the weather does change that people's guard gets relaxed a little bit. How do you guys remind people that, no, the fires start in the middle of winter?
Yeah.
They're going to start in fall, too, if you act stupid. Is that a concern that we kind of relax after? I'm thinking hunting season traditionally was one. I don't even know if they allow hunting anymore. You know, or getting out in the woods and just not realizing what you may be doing because it does feel damp. It's not a concern. What are you most scared of right now as far as fire, other than burning trees on top of you?
Just that this is when things usually start going.
The lightning storms and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and then especially down south where, you know, they're getting to the really dry part of the year. And yeah, maybe people do get a bit complacent.
Just because it's not fire here doesn't mean it's not fire that's going to impact the department.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm most concerned about the whole state. Locally, we're, you know, with wildland fires, that's pretty affected by the lightning this year. But, I think we were 2 years ago as well, and that's just what happens. That's always what's happened.
You had said that one of your water trucks was out of the area. What happens when the equipment that's specialized?
Right.
That you don't have like a fleet of 5 or 6 of these things.
Yeah.
When it's out of the area, does that leave the local community at heightened risk?
Yeah, because we need that piece of equipment. Generally, our tender doesn't go on any extended operation for that exact reason. But the request for it this year was just really unique. And
we need, please.
Yeah, and we, you know, sent it out to help out for a while, and then we brought it back when we needed it and transitioned to the wildland engine, which is, it's an augmental piece for our local response. It has 4-wheel drive capabilities, so it's definitely a specialized piece of equipment for, you know, dealing with things like in the McKay Tract, etc. But
I was thinking Neyland.
Yeah.
You know, with some of the grass that's up on the top there.
Yeah. Yeah, we've definitely been up there. Actually, more in the snow than in the grass meadows.
That would be the 4-wheel drive part?
Yeah, exactly.
Good, I know who to call this winter if I need to get up there then.
But also, if we do need a specialized piece of equipment, and whether it's not here or it's out of service, that's where the mutual aid system works really well. For example, we have, you know, one of 2 ladder trucks in the whole county, and if another agency really needs that, or if they need a hazmat team, then they just special request that. So
there's some local redundancy.
Yeah, exactly. We try to obviously have resources for our immediate needs, but then we're always helping each other out.
Is there ever a pool buy? A piece of gear that wouldn't have needed to be used with any kind of regularity, but there's still the need or the risk of not having it?
Yeah.
And everybody kind of pitches in whatever they can or prescribed percentages, and you buy, and it wherever it lives, but it can be utilized immediately by anybody?
That's more of a process that we do through the Humboldt County Chiefs Association. So one thing is an air refilling station resource. So we have a compressed air trailer, and it moves around for if someone needs it. Because what happens if we have a large extended incident where we're breathing air for a structure fire and we need an ability to refill bottles on site? Because not every agency has a compressed air, an air compressor rather, that can refill bottles that's nearby. So that there would be one example of a resource like that. So yes, that does happen.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
To have that kind of stuff, but mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense for everybody to have one of them.
No. And again, that's why we try to share resources, and it doesn't cost money per se.
Well,
for the agency.
Other than that initial purchase.
Yeah. I'm saying when it gets deployed, there's... You
know. Right, after that point, yeah. You're not, like, charging rent or anything like that.
No.
That'd be tacky. It
would be a bit tacky. But yeah, that's been a benefit for sure.
Is there... What's the next one on that list? Or is there one that you the chief's looking and going, yeah, that would be beneficial.
Well, again, this is usually through our Measure Z process.
Oh, okay. So it's not pulling half of 1% of everybody's operating budget.
No.
Pulling it that way.
It's more through Measure Z that, you know, its intent is to support local fire agencies because most of their volunteers have almost no revenue sources,
right.
But they have significant needs. So an example of that is the rescue team coalition down in Southern Humboldt, where they've tried to build up resources and training and people to be able to deal with water rescue situations and high angle rescue, low angle rescue, things like that.
Is that mountains?
Yes.
Okay.
Mountains
thanks.
And rivers and lakes.
Yeah. I figured the water part out.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, they have a lot of rescues down there because it's really rural and steep. And Shelter Cove has had a few interesting incidents lately. And
it's not something that the coasties will automatically respond to.
No. And if they do down there, they're so far away. I mean, Shelter Cove has a lot of surf rescues and they've created a really good program for that, but it's still, you know, difficult to get out there because those waters are very dangerous.
Well, and get the troops there too. You know, who knows where the volunteers are when the call goes out?
Exactly. They're sometimes nobody's available.
That's got to be weird.
Yeah.
So, how many volunteer departments are there in the state?
In the state?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know that off the top of my head. There's, you know, 36 in Humboldt County. It used to be 42, but had some consolidations.
So say if there's 40, certainly the urban areas don't have volunteer department needs like the rurals do.
Right.
Yeah, we'd think that at the state level that they could do some designated funding specifically for volunteers. Because, you know, it would not be going towards labor.
Right.
Obviously, I mean, it's kind of self-defining on that. But the situations of the local volunteer departments here can't be that unique from other communities right. that have got volunteers, and everybody's kind of in that same boat. You think that you would support those folks.
Yeah, there definitely are grant programs out there that help out. There's a lot with...
But who's got grant writers?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just, okay, here's, pick a number, whatever it is, and if you need, let us know what you need, and if it's purchasing equipment, okay, we'll do a state pool buy.
All right.
And, okay, we'll get three of these and 14 of those and 28 of those and disperse them throughout the state.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult thing to get. It's not easy to get those resources. And again, another example is through Measure Z, one of the requests for the Southern Humboldt communities was getting a four-wheel drive engine that's built on a one-ton pickup chassis, so it's not a full engine.
Right, so kind of like a mini.
Yeah, we call it a Type 6. So basically, it's a full-size pickup with a fire pump in the back. And they requested three or four of those because that really serves their needs for, you know, quick attack down there. And, of course, Measure Z, we were hardly funded for this next fiscal year. But then through the state, they were able to work with McGuire and get
a couple of them
funded. Yeah.
Cool.
So, you know, there is obviously an ability to do that. It's just working with the machinations of state government to try to get those resources.
And the time and effort that it takes to go through the process.
Yeah. And like you said, if, you know, you're a rural volunteer fire chief, you don't have time to...
You got a job somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
In theory.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're retired, and that's a whole different challenge.
Yes.
Working with retired folks. Huh? He smiles, but will not comment.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:49. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Robertson. Volunteer departments are kind of a separate breed of cat. But when you get together with your folks throughout the state that have, well, there's probably not too many. You're probably fairly unique also, having the two entities combined.
Yes.
Are there that many of them?
No, they're not in the whole state.
So you're like onesies, twosies kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, and especially with the city and the fire district. Most of them are either with cities or either with fire districts. So, yeah, ours is pretty unique.
Does that make it easier to find ideas that you can implement? Or very difficult to find ideas that you can implement because you have, I guess, two taskmasters, in effect?
It's actually been both. Reconciling both in terms of resources and I guess resources or needs has been challenging, but in some ways, because it's so unique, I don't know if I'd call it autonomy, but there is an ability to be innovative.
Because the limits haven't been put on?
Yeah.
Because there's nobody screwed it up in the past?
Yeah.
So to speak, yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting because recently I've been doing a lot more research in how these JPAs function and how they have been successful across the state, and it's taken me a long time to even really find others and then speak to the fire chiefs there. And again, everyone is different. Everyone is different. There is no... This is how you do it. This is there are obviously some best practices or even there's government codes that dictate how things should be. But again, going back to the limitations more with the city and a district is the government codes for those two entities are quite different. Here's one very simple example is if you have a procurement policy that triggers when you have to go to bid for a special district that is way lower than a city. Because for a city, you often have huge multi-million-dollar capital projects.
Right, so you'd never get anything done.
Yeah, exactly. If you have a $10,000 limit, which is what a special district has, and you're laughing because it seems ridiculous.
You'd never, never be able to do anything.
We built a 20-foot fence at one of our stations. That almost cost $10,000 now. So it's, yeah, it's just having to figure all those things out all the time.
Is there an understanding so that you can go to whichever the entities are more challenging for that situation or restrictive and try to make them the same? Or understand what the situation is to try to kind of level it out so it's easier to manage and easier to accomplish things?
Yes, that obviously...
Hiring would be another area I would think would be a little bit different.
Yeah, it takes time. And, you know, that's a concern with my succession plan is I've been in this for 5 years now and I don't feel like it's all set and everything's great and it's all smooth sailing. It's like, no.
Which is what you want to leave whoever the next guy is following you.
Because, you know, but again, I think we've talked before about working in with boards or with councils it's always going to be shifting because right. you're always going to have new decision makers that the variables are always changing and you're always having to, know, realign everything. So it's a constant situation and you know, but again the solutions to those is similar to everything is communication and having a good plan and having those foundational things in place.
And tenacity. Well, enjoy your weekend, bud.
Thanks.
Hopefully there'll be no phone calls.
Hopefully.
All right. Or scanner calls.
Yes.
See everybody on Monday.